look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of this Monday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We have a very special show tonight. The title of the show, Endgame, The Final Roman Emperor, Islamic Antichrist, and the Vatican's Role. We are joined by Steve Quayle from stevequayle.com and Tom Horn from Skywatch TV. Chris Putnam was going to join us tonight, but had an unfortunate accident. He's okay. He hurt his hand. Keep him in your prayers for healing. And the first hour has just been fantastic, full of some great information by both Steve and Tom Horn. We're going to turn it over to Steve in hour number two, and we're going to pick up right where we left off.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think tonight is going to be a pivotal moment. What Tom and I have learned from these 17 years, 16 years, whatever, being on the radio together, when he releases something, and it seems like I get to be the second witness, and we get to witness to each other's stuff. God does something, and this is a sense I have in my spirit tonight. So, Tom, you wanted to finish off something, because I think it's really critical that people cannot understand the rise of radical Islam and the embracing of radical Islam by the Vatican until they understand the prophecy of the Cumaean Sibyl and also, you know, the last Roman emperor. So, I mean, we're not just, quote, telling people what's in the future. We're telling them what's going on right now. So go ahead and finish your point, sir. I don't want to cut you off anyway.
Yeah, you know, because the underlying theme behind the Cumae Sibyl's prophecy, what we found out at Mount Graham, the idea that there are Vatican intellectuals who believe the Earth is getting ready to be visited by supernatural, intelligence from another world. All of those different themes, in their own way, really talk about one thing. That is, the Earth is getting ready to be visited by a super intelligence. So whether you call him the Antichrist in the Book of Revelation, whether you call him the last Roman emperor from 15th century prophecy, whether it's the Cumae Sibyl prophesying that Apollo is actually going to return to give birth to a new golden age, all of the both occultic and biblical prophetic utterances tell us that a time is coming where a man is going to appear on the earth, and he is going to be the ruler of the final earthly empire just before the second coming of Jesus Christ. And the Book of Revelation calls him the Antichrist. But now, is this going to be some person that suddenly appears on the political world scene that seems to have the answers to everything? Is this going to be something different coming down from heaven? When we went to the break a moment ago, you were talking about, you know, why in the world did these Vatican authorities believe that we are going to be visited, that it's more likely than not that we're going to be visited by intelligence from another dimension that's going to require us to have to change everything we've ever known about the gospel. So the only point I wanted to make to kind of follow up on the the last thing that you had said before we went to the commercial, is that when you look at the Bible and what it says about the Antichrist, it does lead you to believe that it could include some kind of deception that the world will perceive as being extraterrestrial. In other words, like 2 Thessalonians 2:9, where it says the Antichrist will appear with lying signs and wonders. Luke 21, where it says his coming is going to be marked by fearful sights and great signs from heaven. Is that what Malachi Martin was talking about, that's approaching the earth on Mount Graham? That the Antichrist and the false prophet are described as being aligned, actually, with the powers of the air, and they're able to call down fire from heaven, Revelation 13 says. One of the most intriguing of all of these kind of verses that may work together is Daniel, who says that the Antichrist is actually going to champion the worship of a strange alien god. By the way, if you read that in the Hebrew, that's exactly what he's saying. Daniel 11:38-39, in his estate, I'm reading this now, King James, right? Shall he honor the God of forces, and a God whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and precious stone and pleasant things. Thus shall he do in the strongholds with a strange God whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory. Several parts of that prophecy, and I've read this from the best scholarship out there, stand out as very unusual, very strange language. First of all, this God of forces, or alternately the God of fortresses in the Hebrew, that's connected to Baal Shemem, but it literally means the Lord of the heavens, the Lord of the out there. Now, the Gnostics later worshipped that deity, God of the fortresses, as the greatest angel of light, so in other words, Lucifer. But the second part of that verse, where it says he's a strange God, the Hebrew text there can literally be rendered an alien God. So there is reasons to believe that the Vatican is operating based on something they think they know. And that was part of the second book, Exo Vaticana. By the way, I'm going to do something. I just hang on a second here. I'm making this up as I go.
I know that. That makes your order department just happy. I've seen it happen in real time, ladies and gentlemen, where Tom comes up with, a spur-of-the-moment deal of the century.
Well, they're going to really hate me for this, but because what it does is, you know, they get these special deals put together, and then they know that they can use a flat-rate box that'll deliver anywhere in the U.S. for a certain amount of money. And then I come on radio and do something different, and it just throws everything off. But I'm going to do it anyway. Because there are a lot of people out there who are tuning in for the first time. And I know, by the way, our Roku channel for Skywatch TV now is probably at 1.5 million program plays per month. We know that we're picking up, and that's just Roku. That's not our cable network. That's not our YouTube. That's not anything. So we know we're picking up an awful lot of new followers that may not know anything about what we're talking about tonight, and they certainly have never read any of these first three books. So here's what I'm going to do. Next week, 1 week plus 1 day from now, on Tuesday the 31st, we are releasing the new book, The Final Roman Emperor, The Islamic Antichrist, and the Vatican's Last Crusade, at SkywatchTV.com. We already are giving away over $200 worth of books, movies, the data disc, all this stuff. We're giving it away. And you can go over there right now. There's a YouTube on the top of SkywatchTV.com. You can watch that giveaway. It's the biggest giveaway of 2016 with this book. But if you do go there starting on Tuesday of next week, and if you buy that book, when you go into the comments box at checkout, type in, "I heard you on Hagman and Hagman," and I'm going to make sure that they send you the other $60 worth of these first books. The first book, Petrus Romanus, the second book, Exo Vaticana, and last year's best-selling book, The Path of the Immortals. All three of them have been best-selling books in the classical sense. And I'm going to make sure they give you those as well as all that other stuff they're giving you. So, but you have to type in to the comments box, I heard you on Hagman and Hagman. Anyway, I'll take a lot of heat from that, but I'm going to do it. Because people that are listening to this, especially for the first time, may not have a clue what we're talking about. And I want them to have those books, this 4 years of research. The final, so we do need to move on to this last book and talk about the Kume Sibyl. But the final thing I'd want to say, carried over from the first hour, was when we came down from Mount Graham, and this is what ultimately forced us to write book number three, The Path of the Immortals, it was not until we came down off Mount Graham that I even understood why the Apache had been in a war with the Vatican and NASA and Arizona State University to try to stop them from building the observatory on Mount Graham. So I had made an assumption. I went on Sid Roth's It's Supernatural. I went on the radio with you, Steve. I went on the Jim Baker Show. And I kept saying this same line. I kept saying that the Apache and other indigenous people had joined environmentalists in Arizona to fight the Vatican to try to keep them from going up on the top of that mountain because Mount Graham was for them holy ground. And what I meant by that was the Apache had been there ahead of everybody else. Therefore, their foremothers and forefathers had died, lived and died on that mountain. And so it was like a graveyard. And, you know, taking all this big machinery up there to build this giant observatory research center was going to disturb the mountain and might break the bones of their, you know, of their dead ancients. And so it was kind of like a graveyard. So I was on TV and radio and whatever saying that. Well, I had just got off Sid Roth's It's Supernatural saying that, and I get an email, and this is a guy who is a member of the Apache Nation. And he wanted me to know that while what I had said was okay, it was true enough, that's true, obviously, that it's like a graveyard, and that's part of why they didn't want him up there, but that was not the issue. And this was the day the light went on in my head. He said the issue, the reason that the Apache Nation did not want the Vatican going onto the top of Mount Graham is because Mount Graham is one of the four holiest mountains in all of the world for all American indigenous people. And it is, he said, because Mount Graham is what you would call a stargate, a doorway, a portal, a strategic geographic location through which entities have entered into and exited from Earth's three-dimensional reality since the dawn of time. Well, Steve, when he told me that, I'm telling you what, the conspiracy meter in my head went off the Richter scale, because immediately I started thinking, wait a minute, the fact that the Vatican was willing to go to federal court and fight to be on this mountain, I mean, had always been a mystery to me. Why not just go to another mountain, find the same elevation, find the same environmental situations, find an area where the community would love to have you because they think maybe you're going to bring some economy to that area. Why go through all this trouble? This then made metaphysical sense to me, that the Vatican wanted on the top of that mountain because this mountain was something different than what most of us can even begin to comprehend. Well, the first thing I did was I ran out and vetted what I had heard. I made sure that was true. But the wheels started turning in my head, and ultimately it led to me sending Chris Putnam and a film crew to back to Mount Graham, as well as Sedona, Arizona, and that whole kind of, you know, eastern tip of the what they call the Anasazi Trail, while I went to the Four Corners. And now I think that kind of brings people up to where we are now, because I think everybody knows pretty much the story about me going to the Four Corners, meeting with fourth generation medicine man, and all the stuff that we did in the book On the Path of the Immortals that had to do with this question: is this idea that Mount Graham is a portal, is that just like a New Age idea? Is that an American Indian idea? Or is there a biblical precedent for this idea that there are strategic locations of the earth that are doorways, gateways. And once we started down that road, we couldn't even read the Bible the same way anymore, because you look in the Old Testament and you definitely see the mountain of God, Mount Zion. You see that if Moses is going to meet with God, he's got to go to the top of the Mount of Sinai. And then you come into the New Testament, you hear Jesus saying, from henceforth, you will see the windows, the gateways of heaven open, and angels ascending and descending. You go into the prophetic book, Jesus returns and his feet touch down on the top of Mount Hermon. So the whole Bible started reading entirely different to us, and that's pretty much what the book, The Path of the Immortals, is all about. And one final thing, Steve, is that you were talking earlier in the first hour about stargates and doorways. The Path of the Immortals has a lot to say about stargates and doorways, but not just that at one time in ancient times they opened, through which the giants emerged onto the earth, but the New Testament, and especially the prophetic text, we concluded that this is the most overlooked aspect of end times biblical prophecy, that not only did those gates open once before, but they are prophesied to open once again, and that the giants that are contained within the belly of the earth are going to emerge onto the surface of the earth. That's biblically prophetic.
Well, and I think that obviously the idea that is going to come into everyone's reality with even a semblance of ability to think is that this whole thing is a supernatural, multidimensional setup, okay? And when we say to people, you better understand what's happening, because if you don't, you're going to be swallowed up by it. This is what Jesus said. And Tom, the light went off for me the night you and I were doing radio, I don't know, 5 or 7 years ago, whenever, and you talked about the gates to hell. Up until that point, that scripture had never entered into my spirit. And I've been writing about this stuff, you know, but then I saw it, and it was my time to see that. So, you know, the thing that I think is critical for people to understand is, look, there is a war going on. It is not optional. It is not, well, I think I need to take a break and go play my video game. Or, excuse me, the Super Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, the Hula Bowl, the Happy Bowl, and the Toilet Bowl are all on right now. And I just want to take a break from reality. Well, the ultimate divorce from reality is the fact that this stuff is playing out. It's playing out in the theaters. It's playing out in movies. It's playing out in the headlines. You know, 100 people, you carried the story on Skywatch, 100 kids getting demon-possessed by a dark man. The amount of the werewolf in London, it's not a song by, I forget who first sang that, but now they're werewolf sightings. People are having preternatural events. Now, again, this is what's going to happen, and the gates of hell will not prevail, but if they're not going to prevail, it certainly doesn't say they're not going to attempt to. So let's get to the Kumaian Sibyl right now, because basically on your new work, and I think, I by the way, I love the title, okay? You know me. I want Tom Horn's bottom line, okay? And this is the bottom line. The final Roman Emperor, the Islamic Antichrist, and the Vatican's last crusade. How many times have we heard that the Holy Roman Empire, the 10 nations, blah, blah, blah. I remember saying 20 years ago, what happens if that's Islamic nations? And I think one guy, a newsletter writer, called it Islamistan. And now we've got the absolute playing out of this. And for the record, ladies and gentlemen, you know, you're going to be blown away way at how fast this thing takes foot. So, Tom, share if you would, because I think this is the most amazing thing that when you guys were working on the background for part four, you know, of your series, The Final Roman Emperor, the Islamic Antichrist, and the Vatican's Last Crusade, how the sibyls, if you will, the prophetesses, and I would say hell's mouthpieces, play so important a role, and that the Vatican believes them. Can you lay that out, sir?
Yeah, so let me first talk about the basic premise of the book, and I wish now that I had Chris Putnam here, because he did a great deal of the research into the prophecies of the Cumae Sibyl as it involves the final Roman emperor, but I can summarize it as I'm part of the book. The last Roman emperor, or if you're out there Googling about this, you might turn up great Catholic monarch, which is what some of the Catholics also believe. And by the way, if you're listening to this show, this is not something me and Putnam just made up. This is a belief that was extraordinarily believed by the Vatican itself, by the popes, by the theologians of the church all the way up through the 15th century. But even to this day, there are Catholic television shows, blog sites, in which they totally believe in this coming Catholic monarch, and some of them are tying it with the arrival of Pope Francis. Now, why? Well, we'll talk about that in a moment. So, this is a legend. It actually developed this eschatology of the Roman Catholic Church that predicted that in the end times, there was going to be a last emperor, and he would appear on earth, he would reestablish the Holy Roman Empire, and he would stall the coming of the Antichrist. And according to ancient interpretation of the prophecy, the reign of this emperor or monarch would be connected to the arrival of the final pope. So that's what makes this very, very important. And between the two of them, according to Catholic hope, they're going to restore Christendom to its rightful state after a period of apostasy. The prophecy was originally given by one of the Apollinian Sibyls, which we'll define that more in a moment, the Sibyls of Apollo. This one in particular is sometimes called the Tiburtine Sibyl. And let me read you just a part of the prophecy so that you understand kind of where, you know, part of the background to the upcoming book is coming from. Here's part of the prophecy in which he allegedly said under unction. She said, this final emperor, he's going to be, quote, the king of the Romans and the Greeks. He's going to be tall of stature, of handsome appearance, with shining face. He's going to put together in all parts of his body. But he is going to devastate all of the islands and the cities of the pagans and will destroy all idolatrous temples. Let me jump in here for a moment. And not to confuse people, but when you look at the title of our book, The Final Roman Emperor, The Islamic Antichrist, and the Vatican's Last Crusade, some people think that that title implies that Chris and I believe that the Antichrist is going to be Muslim. And that is not what the title of that book is talking about. Joel Richardson is a friend of mine, but we are not talking about his thesis about the Islamic Antichrist. What we are talking about, and which you will discover in the book, is that what Islam, the radical Islamists today, ISIS for instance, what they believe about the coming of their Mahdi was actually plagiarized hundreds of years ago from this prophecy of the Cumae Sibyl. They took it and they Islamified it, if you will, to be a prophecy about the coming of their end times Mahdi. While the Catholics took this prophecy of the Cumae Sibyl and they Christianized it, or they Catholicized it, to be the coming of the leader of the Vatican. And so both of these actually are derived from an ancient prophecy of the Cumae Sibyl, who's actually talking about the coming of Apollo. So, if that helps you, but in this Tiburtine prophecy, it expands on the coming of this god Apollo and says that he is going to drive all the pagans out and destroy all idolatrous temples. That is why you see the Islamists right now tearing down all these pagan temples, destroying all this stuff that they think belongs to the pagans, killing even Muslims who don't agree with their point of view or their faith, because they believe that that is part of their prophesied duty to wipe out the infidels and to wipe out the apostates. The Catholics, however, believe that the coming Roman emperor is going to work with the final pope, and they're going to purify Catholicism. They're going to drive out all the apostates within Catholicism. Now, keep that in mind, because in a little bit I want to make a point about some of the stuff Pope Francis is doing. But let me get back to the prophecy. He will call all pagans to baptism, and in every temple the cross of Christ will be erected. This is the Catholic version. Then Egypt and Ethiopia will be eager to stretch their hands to God. Whoever does not adore the cross of Jesus Christ will be punished by the sword. When his years have completed, at that time, the prince of iniquity, who will be called Antichrist, will rise from the tribe of Dan. He will be the son of perdition, the head of pride, the master of error, the fullness of malice, who will overturn the world and do wonders and great signs through dissimulation. He will delude many by magic art so that fire will seem to come down from heaven. Let me jump ahead here. When the Roman Empire shall have ceased, now this starts combining with the prophecy of the Pope, the destruction of Rome, then the Antichrist will be openly revealed and will sit in the house of the Lord in Jerusalem. While he is reigning, two very famous men, Elijah and Enoch, will go forth to announce the coming of the Lord. Antichrist will kill them, and after 3 days they will be raised up by the Lord. Then there will be great persecution, such as has not before nor ever shall be thereafter. The Lord will shorten those days for the sake of the elect, and the Antichrist will be slain by the power of God through Michael the Archangel of the Mount of Olives, end quote. So here you have a very, very ancient, in fact, nobody knows exactly how old this prophecy is, that came from the prophetesses of Apollo, but that was Christianized. Now, by the way, this prophecy was quoted by Justin, who is in direct line with John, the beloved disciple of Jesus. It was quoted by numerous other early church fathers. So there was a great amount of belief system, and this prophecy precedes the early church fathers themselves. So we're talking about something extraordinarily old as Jesus or older. Nobody really even knows how old this prophecy is. But it's definitely talking about the end of time and the final destruction of Rome. Now, here's why this is partly important, and I'll try to move through this quickly. That prophecy, the final Roman emperor, is interesting in light of the current spread of Islam and ISIS, as that prophecy specifically deals with how the final emperor and the pope are going to rise during a war, they say. And this is part of the prediction that I make in this final book. It's my biggest prediction yet. But it's a war in which the Muslim nations, according to the Kume Sibyl, they invade, they conquer, they occupy Europe. Catholic scholars today say that's going to be World War III. And then, in a subsequent war following that, Catholic scholars call that World War IV. Europe then is free. Now, why is this important? Because look at what Pope Francis has been saying and doing even over the last 10 weeks. He has been diligently preaching the last few weeks, almost kind of like the messenger preparing the way, if you will, for the coming of the final Roman emperor. He has been preaching the same thing that the Kume Sibyl said, that this final emperor is not going to lead to the end of the Jewish and Islamic and Catholic faith, but he is going to do away with the division within Judaism, Islam, and Christianity, and he is going to combine these religious systems, Judaism, Catholicism, or Christianity, and the Islamic faith. I'll come back to what Pope Francis is doing here in a moment, because I want to first throw something out at you here that you need to hear. In the 12th century, there was an abbot by the name of Werdin de Otrante. You can look up his prophecies on the Internet. But in the 12th century, here's what he said. He said, when this great monarch and this final great pope arrive, they will precede the Antichrist. He said, the nations will be in wars for 4 years, and a great part of the world will be destroyed, and the sects will vanish. The capital of the world will fall. The capital of the world, he doesn't identify, but it's going to fall. Is that America? Is that Rome? We don't know. The Pope will go over the sea carrying the sign of redemption on his forehead, and after the victory, of the Pope and the great monarch, peace will reign on the earth. Now, here's the part I want you to hear. The Pope will cross, I'm quoting now Abbot Warden de Otrante, who is reading the prophecy of the Cum Ae Sibyl. The Pope will cross the sea, listen to what he says, in the year when the Feast of St. George, now we did all the research around this, the Feast of St. George is April 23rd. When the Feast of St. George falls on Good Friday, and St. Mark's Feast, that's April 25th, falls on Easter Sunday, and the Feast of St. Anthony, that's June 13th, falls on Pentecost, and the Feast of St. John the Baptist, which is June the 24th, falls on Corpus Christi. So he gives a very, very specific timeline. Well, guess what? The concurrences of those feasts will not take place until 2038, and not before. So if you then take the prophecy of the final Roman Emperor, the war of the great Catholic monarch that is considered to be World War IV, that lasts 4 years, so you back up, the Pope crosses the sea to Europe from the U.S., where the Holy See is going to be in exile, according to the Pope. That's from the latter part of the World War III aspect of this prophecy. And then the Pope crosses the sea. This would have to be in 2038. Therefore, the war has to end in 2037. I know this is all sounding confusing, but I'm getting somewhere. Which means that it starts 4 years earlier than that, around 2033 or 2034, and Europe is occupied during the 2020s, and so the war in which the Muslim extremists conquer Europe has to occur in the year, actually between 2016 and 2017. So we're talking about a very old prophecy, and Abbot Worden's analysis of the prophecy is from the 12th century, that all say the same thing, by the way, that so many other, I wrote the book, Zenith 2016, how many ancient cultures are there that's going to tell us, right, that this is all going to culminate starting in 2016 through 2018. It's extraordinary. But here again, a prophecy of the Cum Ae Sibyl and the interpretation by Abbot Warden de Otrante from the 12th century gives us the time frame in which the dominoes are going to start falling later in 2016 into the year 2017. And at some point, this this character, if you will, is going to appear on the world scene. Now, okay, I gave you a whole bunch of stuff, and it's all very confusing because you have to read the book to really wrap your head around all this. So let me break it down into something more simple. And these are the most amazing points about what the Pope is doing now and this final book. Number one, the final Roman Emperor prophecy happens when the final Pope arrives. So that's the bottom line. When the final Pope arrives on the Malachi list, that is when the final Roman Emperor is going to appear. Number two, the Sibyl saw something that is extraordinary. Because don't forget, this was written about literally thousands of years ago. And she literally describes how international democracy will be viewed as a failed system in the world's mind, and therefore there will be a push to return to a global monarchy or a dictatorship with socialist leanings. I mean, is that extraordinary or what? Given what Pope Francis has been saying, what the United Nations has been saying, given that more than 50% of Americans under the age of 30 would vote for an avowed socialist in Bernie Sanders, this seems extraordinary. Thirdly, this new global monarchy or dictatorship is going to result in what the Sibylline called the Golden Age under the return of Apollo Osiris. We can talk more about that if we get time. That's the prophecy on the Great Seal of the United States. Fourthly, at the core of the last emperor is the idea that apostate is anybody that don't agree with me, if I say so, right? They're going to be driven from both the Mohammedan and Christian religions, uniting in a single harmonized and global religious order under the final pope and the final emperor. Now, brother, that is amazing, given what Pope Francis has been saying over just the last 10 days. Only two examples. Number one, he gave an interview a week and a half ago, chock full of commentary, literally torn from the Sibyl's prophecy, for those who understand the prophecy, in which he said, quote, "It is true that the idea of conquest, which is part of the emperor prophecy, is inherent in the soul of Islam. However, it is also possible to interpret the objective in Matthew's gospel, where Jesus sends his disciples to all nations in terms of the same idea of conquest." This is literally codifying, if you will, the prophecy of the Cum Sibyl about the final Roman emperor, in that Francis is saying, he even went on to say that Muslim migrants need to breed with Europeans. It's the Europeans that the Cum Sibyl said would be infiltrated and overthrown by the final Roman emperor and the final pope. He said they need to breed with Europeans to assure their growing dominance and presence in and throughout Europe. And then just earlier today, and Steve, I think you already know this. I'm sure that you, Hagman, Joe, and Doug already know this. Just today, Pope Francis actually embraced the top imam in a historic meeting at the Vatican. And then he made a cryptic announcement at the end of it, and this is going to have people's mind lit up for a while. He said, "Our meeting is the message." He didn't even explain that. "Our meeting is the message." He meets with the Grand Imam of Cairo's Al-Hazar Mosque at the Vatican today in a historic encounter. It was sealed with a hugely symbolic hug and exchange of kisses. The Vatican said that this is the first meeting between the leader of the world's Catholics and the highest authority in Sunni Islam. I'm reading this now from the headline. "Marks the culmination of a significant improvement in relations between the two faiths since Francis took office in 2013. Our meeting is the message," Francis said in a brief comment to a small pool of reporters present at the start of the meeting with Sheikh Ahmed Al-Tayyib, again torn straight, literally, from the pages of the Sibyl's final emperor prophecy. So, and all of this happening after Chris Putnam and I sent the book to the typesetter, and it's actually being shipped this week to us. By the way, we're going to get that book to the people from Hagman and Hagman that order it even before the stores even receive it. But so how extraordinary is that?
Well, I think it's not only extraordinary, I think it echoes, or, if you will, underscores my statement. It's fascinating that it's like God is using world events to put exclamation points on that which he's placed within his people's hearts to warn his people. You know, the scripture says, "Surely Lord God will do nothing except he reveals his secrets to his servants, the prophets." And I'm not, you know, the testimony of Jesus, the spirit of prophecy. But look at the timing, Tom. This meeting today, see, actually the reported meeting today is on the night that you and I are on with Doug Hagman, and that was set weeks ago, okay? This night, right, ladies and gentlemen, was set weeks ago for us to appear. So what I find it interesting is every single day, and the medium, you know, this meeting is a message. That's a takeoff on Marshall McLuhan's famous statement that the media is the message. And so what he's saying is what you see is happening before your eyes. I believe that was the greatest illuminist statement that's been so plain for all to see. And the fact that, here's what I think we've got to make it clear, that obviously that Satan knows the latitude that God's given to him, and it's going to play out. But God has warned his people. And, Tom, I'll tell you what, you know, sends goosebumps through my body right now. I know what happens when events of this magnitude take place, and I know that the dominoes, okay, the dominoes that have hidden evil, the dominoes that have kept evil out of our dimension are down. The gates are open. The stargates are opening. And for the record, just as Tim found out, all over the world, the universal symbol for stargates is a spiral. It didn't matter if they were in Sardinia. It didn't matter if they were in Rome. It didn't matter if they were in Malta. It didn't matter if they were in Peru, Bolivia. The universal symbol for stargates is the spiral. The Native Americans that contact me, they're saying there's a lot of events happening. There's a lot of gates opening. And what I think is fascinating, you know, the ancients understood one thing, and I don't know how it all works, but they knew that when the volcanoes started going off, that the evil spirits that were, if you will, held in abeyance for this specific time would be released. And whether it's Popo in Mexico City, or it's, you know, Simbayang, or Reventador, any of the bigger volcanoes, Mount Etna, Vesuvius is probably next, but all of these are going off. And Tom, you cannot separate them from the legends of the fallen angels. Now, here's what I find that's fascinating. We're watching, if you will, the whole Earth, E-A-R-T-H, convulse. We're watching the birth pangs, and I don't think people are going to like what's being born on this Earth. I don't think, and I'm talking about the evil that's coming. But in your book, you detail such a specific series of events that have been laid out thousands of years before. And isn't it interesting? You know, people should realize this, the preeminent Sibyl in the Sistine Chapel represented is the Cumaean Sibyl. Is that not true?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, well, let's talk about that a little bit, but let me follow up with one final statement about what I had said a moment ago, that these prophecies of the Kume Sibyl that came down, they were borrowed by other Sibyls, they were repeated by even early church fathers, that resulted in the coming of the great end times monarch, this leader of a final world system. I believe that what the Catholics have done is that they have taken the prophecies of the Kume Sibyl, and in a way they've reversed them to set themselves up for great deception. Why would I say that? Because they believe that there's a coming great socialist dictator, so does Francis evidently, who's going to work with this final pope, and he's going to be their temporary savior, and that the Antichrist is not going to appear until after the final emperor. But I believe that's the exact opposite of what the book of Revelation teaches, that the great monarch, the great emperor, is going to be the Antichrist working with a false prophet, according to the book of Revelation, and it's not until after that the second coming of Jesus Christ occurs. The ISIS Islamists are also deceived because they too plagiarized the Kume Sibyl's prophecy to point to their coming Mahdi, and so in the same way they're going to accept the Savior. In fact, we have a chapter in our book on the final Roman Emperor how Muslims, Jews, and Christians are all going to be deceived by the coming of the final Roman Emperor, are going to accept Antichrist as their Savior. Well, of course, the book of Revelation makes that point too. But I believe that so all three, the Jews, the Christians and Catholics, and the Muslims, are going to accept this false prophet, which is going to be the Antichrist. So the connection of the ancient Sibyls, the prophecies of the god Apollo, Osiris, Nimrod, is literally extraordinary in light of her reverential place that you mentioned a moment ago in the Sistine Chapel, and on the great seal of the United States of America. Now, is this just Tom Horn and Chris Putnam and Steve Quayle being evangelicals, and therefore, like the Protestants of the turn of the century, and, you know, we're taking a shot at Catholicism to accuse them of being the Antichrist and whatever? What an awful lot of Catholics might not know is that that is exactly the belief system of many of the early Catholic theologians. Many early Catholic theologians and many of their most celebrated visions, Marian apparitions, including La Salette, pointed to how the day would come in which Rome would become apostate, and Rome would actually become the seat of the Antichrist, and lead the world in the misdirection. There is highly placed church experts, even in recent years, that have asserted that there is Satan worship that is very real, very powerful, that is occurring inside the Leonine walls of the Holy See in order to establish the coming of Antichrist in the place of Christ, or in the place, the Antichrist as the celebrated final Roman emperor, the great monarch. By the way, for instance, if Catholics listening to this show want to Google some of this to make sure that I'm not just making this up, Google Monsignor Luigi Martinelli, who about 15 years ago wrote a book called Gone with the Wind in the Vatican, sold 100,000 copies in just the first 3 weeks, and look at what it discusses. Satanism being practiced by the highest cardinals at the Vatican. There's an exorcist you can Google, Archbishop Emmanuel Melango. He actually spoke at the Fatima 2000 celebration when the vision of Fatima was allegedly released at the International Conference on World Peace, and he charged high-ranking members of the church hierarchy as being in league with Satan, he said, and that they too were working to try to mislead the Catholic faithful into the acceptance of the final Roman emperor as a messianic-like figure that's going to lead this new world order, if you will, but that in fact they would be deceived into accepting the Antichrist. Of course, you know, Malachi Martin, the Pontifical Biblical Institute writer that we've talked about so many times, at the time that Emmanuel Melango, the archbishop, said what he did at Our Lady of Fatima 2000, the Manhattan magazine, the Fatima and Crusader, they asked Martin, because there was some public alarm that was raised about what Melango was saying about high-ranking Vatican officials who were followers of Satan. They asked him about it, and Martin said, anybody who's acquainted with the state of affairs in the Vatican in the last 35 years is well aware that the princes of darkness have had and continue to have their surrogates in the court of St. Peter in Rome. So this is something that for modern Catholics comes as a real surprise. They don't have any idea that some of their recent theologians, as well as some of the ancient theologians, agreed, and some of their venerated Marian apparitions, that Rome would become the seat of the Antichrist and lead the world into deception based on this final Roman emperor, this final monarch prophecy. It's a real surprise. Most modern Catholics today, I talk to them all the time, they're absolutely astonished. They can't believe it when I tell them, look, some of the early church fathers of the Roman Catholic Church, some of the most celebrated of their theologians, said that at the end of time, the Vatican would become the seat of the Antichrist. They are astonished by that, but it's actually a pretty common eschatology among high-level Catholic scholars. Men like, here's some more names to Google, Cardinal Henry Manning, Bishop Salvador Zola, Frederick William Helle. These are extraordinary names in Catholic history, and all of them saw that in the last days, a demonically infested clergy at the highest levels in Rome would subvert and use the papacy as a political vehicle for an occult world order. And that's, of course, what Malachi Martin wrote so much of his books and material about. And by the way, 10 years before Malachi said something pulled his feet out from under him while he was preparing for an exorcism and he later died, he was working on a book at that time. And he said it was going to be his most explosive book ever. The title of it was going to be called Primacy, How the Institutional Roman Catholic Church Became a Creature of the New World Order. And at that time, if you recall, he was very outspoken about pedophilic Satanism at the heart of the Vatican, throughout the College of Cardinals, all the way down to the local parishes. He said they were in league with a secret diabolicus that began following what he called an enthronement of the fallen archangel Lucifer in the Roman Catholic Citadel in the 1960s. And I think we've talked about this before, so maybe we shouldn't go over it again, but he said there was a ritual to enthrone Lucifer as the Prince of Rome, and secondly, to assure that that inception happened, and that an immaterial spirit, the spirit of Lucifer, was embodied within a final pope. He even wrote the book, The Final Conclave. And here we are living in this very moment in time, right? And in that book, in the Keys to His Blood, he said John Paul was scared. John Paul, he said, was terrified. He had come up against an irremovable presence in the Vatican that he called the super force. And they were working to make sure that the prophecy of the Cume Sibyl, the final Roman emperor, this last monarch, that Catholics around the world would be deceived into accepting this individual as their temporary Messiah, as their leader and the final pope, but they would actually be embracing the Antichrist. Well, this has come full circle. This has come to fruition now. We're at the final pope. And he is behaving in such a way that it appears that he too sees himself in a role, because now he's out there doing, Steve, what you said you dreamt of or you had a vision of when you were a young preacher, that the day would come in which the Muslim faith and the Catholic faith would be united into this end times super force that Malachi Martin said would cause the Vatican to become the seat of the Antichrist.
Well, and you know, I've shared that, but again, here's the other issue, Tom, that really is critical at this point. The amount of disclosure that's coming, the amount of exoplanets, everything we deal with, okay? You know, one thing that I was praying about one night about what else the Lucifer telescope is looking for, you know, people automatically assume it's Planet X. You know, I know in my Bible when New Jerusalem comes down out of heaven, could it be that they are also looking for that because they know the lateness of the hour, they know their prophecies, and that's one thing that terrifies them that they cannot control because it's under God's control? Have you ever considered that?
I missed part of what you said, Steve. Sorry.
Oh, I said, have you ever considered that the Vatican may be looking for New Jerusalem because they understand, in addition to Planet X and everything else, but... You know, it's interesting because obviously they know the lateness of the hour. You know, Lucifer has deceived his followers that they're going to make war against God and defeat him. But the curiosity of the infrared spectrum, and I know a little bit about infrared, but the point being, is it not also, it troubles me, not that it troubles, it just puts me into one of those light switch moments that we talk about New Jerusalem coming down out of heaven, you know, and that happens at a certain point. But what is it? I think they're looking for multiple, how should I say this, events. Now, you went on record, excuse me, the Vatican guy said to you and Chris when you're at Mount Graham, we've got to wait for the fields to clear sometimes through our telescopes. Obviously, the higher the magnification, the smaller the field, for the UFOs to get out of the way. Could it also be that I'm just throwing this out, that being aware of the scriptures and being aware of the fight that's coming and their embracing of the fallen one and his followers, Lucifer and his followers, could it not be that too? In essence, what challenges them? Now, obviously, they got the Hubble and everything, but they're fixed, and obviously they know about Planet X, so you know, I'm just throwing that out there. Have you ever considered that?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that not long ago. You know, this whole thing with the Kepler star and the constellation Cygnus, where they're talking about it. Maybe it's an alien megastructure. They don't know what it is, right? Some people saying maybe it's a Dyson sphere. But the thing that went through my head is, what if it's the New Jerusalem? And the other thing is, don't forget that the Scripture says about Satan, this thing is coming down. It's nearing the earth. What if it is the New Jerusalem? Remember what it says about Satan, that he knows that his time's coming to an end. He knows that he has but a few days, that there is a timing to the playing out of these of this end times phenomena. So maybe he's also as aware that the thing that is approaching the earth. By the way, you also said
hold that thought, Tom. Hold that thought, Tom and Steve. We are up against the top of the hour break. When we come back in hour number three, if we can hit on that star that is dimming light out in outer space, and then what you were just about to get into on the other side, stay with us.
Star Radio Network.